It's one thing to lose. It's another thing that we all had to sit here and watch it until 4:40.
Dog, that was hard to watch.
And it was the worst football game ever.
It really was.
And you lost.
Yep.
God!
Long, ugly loss. Those are the three things I don't want in football, and I absolutely got all three of those.
God. Welcome in. It's the Project Game Day postgame show. Glenn Clark and the NFL chick, Sarita Hubbard. It's brought to you by Glory Days Grill. Catch all of the action at your neighborhood Glory Days Grill, where they have tons of TVs to catch every moment of every game. $5.99 burgers on Mondays, $5.99 nachos on Thursdays, drink specials throughout the week to either help you cheer on your favorite teams or because you really need a drink right now.
Mm-hmm.
Come in today and try something from the seasonal menu as well. Glory Days Grill. Great food, good sports. So
what? What do you want to talk about?
Like, this is one of those games where you're like almost too depressed to even like go through all of the things that bother you, right? Like, here's what bothered me today. I don't know how the game would have turned if Michael Crabtree would have caught the football a few times, for example, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how the game would have been different if the Ravens would have decided to maybe try to quarterback sneak it in from the 1 yard line in the first half. I don't know how the game would have been different if they had decided in overtime when they got the ball back with 3 minutes left. Maybe running the ball could still be an option right here. Maybe we don't just have to throw the ball three times.
Yep.
I don't know how the game would have been different if on the final possession they had maybe decided to run the ball when they got down to a point in the field in which they were comfortably in field goal range.
Yep.
But yet maybe taking some time off the clock would have been smart to not allow the Browns to get an opportunity to kick a game-winning field goal at the end of regulation, which I'm aware they missed. Like, I don't know how any of these things would have possibly changed the game, but I know that all of them occurred, and I know that all of it was a disaster, and I know that all of it was gross, and I know that all of it is the reason why basically what you did in Pittsburgh last week now doesn't matter whatsoever because you traded it off for another division loss on the road.
Absolutely.
And this is where you are.
You know, it's so funny because before we came on and I came in to the studio and I said to you, hey, you know, they keep trying to tell us this in the same old Ravens. It's, yes, you are. You're
right.
The same old Ravens. You still don't know how to run the football. You still think you're a pass-happy team. You still don't have an identity really on the offense. Yes.
Well, and you still, for the most part, don't run the ball well when you do.
Yes. And
for
when
the
you,
most part.
Right. And I know that Alex Kyle, I know that his numbers will say that I think he had over 5 yards.
He was 5 yards a carry.
I get that. But when you watched it in real time, you felt like that there was a lot of plays that they had some tackles for losses or they just got back to the line of scrimmage. So there were bigger plays because in the first quarter, Alex Collins, I think his first one was a 19-yard run. So he had bigger plays that helped him with that average per carry, but there were a lot of plays that he didn't get much. He got minimal or he had some tackles for a loss. I don't know why the Ravens continue to fool us and try to tell us that they're doing things differently. The only way that you can do things differently, Glenn, and this is just my opinion, is if you have different guys running the show. The same guy that was running the show last year on offense, Marty Morningwig, is the same guy that's running it this year.
Right.
So for us to expect anything different just because that the players have been moved around is a little we were fooling ourselves, I'd like to think.
Yeah, now, all that being said, we were giving Marty Morningwig credit a week ago. And
Yes, we were.
Shame on us, I guess, is the best way to say that. Shame on fool me once, shame on, you know, the whole thing. Shame on us for the fact that we were giving Marty Morningwig credit last week because there was always going to be something like this.
Yep.
Look, some of these things, I'll bring a few things up as we're going to start getting to some of your comments. Want to hear from you after the Ravens lose 12-9. Was that Jesus Christ? 12-9 in overtime with the Browns. My God. From Jonathan, it has to be the worst call game I have ever watched by the Ravens. Sorry, folks. I'm not a Harbaugh fan, and this game clearly shows how he has no clue how a game should be played. If you want to beat up John Harbaugh today, I think the only – like, there's no individual coaching decision. There's not like he – bungled a decision to go for it on fourth down or anything along those lines. The only way that you can be critical of John Harbaugh is, and we've talked about this in the past, Reed, we talked about this after the Bengals game, if you get caught up in whether or not John Harbaugh needs to be more involved in going over and saying, Marty, what are we doing?
Yep.
And in 2018, when we're now in the 11th year with John Harbaugh, I think we can all kind of figure out that's not going to happen.
Yep.
If John Harbaugh wasn't willing to call off what he described personally as the all-time worst play call ever 2 seasons ago. Let's remember that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
He described that against the Eagles as the all-time worst play call ever, and yet he wouldn't go say, I'm overruling. So at this point, I don't think we can expect at any point John Harbaugh is going to do that.
Correct.
Now, if your answer is that means that disqualifies him as a head coach,
that's so can, subjective.
Right. You can have your opinion about it, but if we're expecting that that's going to occur at some point, we're only doing that for our health. It's very clearly not going to be the case. AJ, I expected them to lose this week. If Justin Tucker makes the field goal at halftime, we win. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing you can add on to the what could have been
list. I'm going further back from that. I mean, I really felt like when they were down and that second down when he threw the interception, I really couldn't understand it. I mean, I know they've done that in the past. I know they love that play where they, you know, fake it and they roll to the right and they throw to the person out of the backfield. I just didn't think it was necessary this time. I literally thought, hey, if you need all 4 opportunities, I would just try to push it in, because again, we talked about this off air, you have a quarterback who has done very well getting first downs with short yardage situations. So I just thought that if they could just keep pinching, you know, pushing and pushing and pushing towards the goal line, and,
right,
and if he went for a fourth down situation and all you needed was the quarterback to go over the goal, then that would have been touchdown. I didn't feel like it was – I don't want to nitpick here, but I felt at that moment when I saw it developing into a pass play, I just felt like it was so unnecessary.
Right, and this is the thing. We talked about this at halftime. Every element of that is questionable,
yeah,
right? It starts with the call. It's questionable. Obviously, the throw is questionable, right? Like, the tight end is double covered in that,
yes,
situation.
Yes, and you why do it anyway. Yeah.
Why are you making that throw? And then the third level is the fact that it was tipped, which made it worse, right? Like, you could say, hey, the decision was bad, but unless it's tipped, it's probably not intercepted,
right?
It's probably just an incomplete pass. So you start with a play call where we think that there's another play call. Again, you want to say on second down, you want to start, you don't want a quarterback sneak it? Why not? Why not sneak it on? All you're doing with your quarterback sneak all season is executing.
Yep.
You've looked like Tom effing Brady.
Yep.
Sneaking the ball. Why is it that now on second down, when you're a yard out,
thank you,
you go away from the thing that has
thank
always
you
been working? And the argument that I get from everybody is we just need to run the ball there. I don't know. I think we get caught up in the minutia of, if you've got a great play call that you feel is going to work in order to be able to throw the ball in, they are certainly expecting you to run, so I understand. But no matter what, no matter when they've expected it, when they've not expected this season, every time you've quarterback snuck it,
whatever
you want to go with, it's worked.
That's the problem with coaching, because too many times we find that coaches are trying to outsmart the other team. And 9 times out of 10, in my opinion, they tend to outsmart themselves.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's work. It doesn't matter if they're looking forward. If you say that I am the better team at doing this, then you're the better team at defending this, it doesn't matter. Do it anyway.
Right, yeah, go run it out there. I hear you.
And I'm talking specifically about you saying,
right, say, I'm just gonna
that
go,
he would
right
be good, that he's been good. Good in sneaking situations.
Unbelievable.
If he's been good overall and you think that they have an idea that he's going to sneak it, so?
Right.
So what? So
other,
what?
Other teams have thought that when you've been in fourth and short this
as
season,
say,
and it's worked anyway.
How many times in fourth down or third down and one have you gone for it and they knew that you were going to go for it and you still got it? And so now all of a sudden you want to be sneaky or you're trying to be a little bit tricky here. And I just didn't feel like at that moment it was necessary. And I think that that's the problem that I have. Again, I don't want to split hairs.
Right.
I feel like I am. But I'm telling you, at that moment while I was watching it live, when I saw that he didn't actually hand off the ball, I was like, I feel like this is a bad idea.
For what it's worth, I genuinely thought they were offsides on the field goal block, but I'd have to go back and watch it again. I genuinely thought they were. And sometimes you just think that because you can't believe how quickly somebody gets off.
I felt like Myles Garrett was pretty.
Yep.
I don't know if he knew the snap count that well. I don't know, but I felt like for a good portion of the game he was offsides, and I know he was called only a couple of times, but I felt like for the most part he was getting there before the ball was snapped. For whatever reason, as we saw in overtime specifically, the refs just said, F it. We just ain't calling nothing no more.
So KZ chimes in a couple of times, wants to bring up 56 passes, 20 runs.
Yes,
and that's
correct.
That's fine. And he also just says, coaching again. But his third comment is the one that I think is the most important. It echoes what Mick had said. Mick says, Crabtree needs to be beat up. KZ
wow
says, all that said, I think Mick means verbally beat up.
Okay.
I don't think actually like taken in the street.
I don't know how I feel about that either, but go ahead.
KZ says, all that said, if Crabtree could catch a perfectly thrown ball, they win. Crabtree's junk. Everybody's getting in on Crabtree. Like that to me, ultimately, If you had to ask me to paint the story of the game, I would not exclude the play calling, but I would absolutely say this game got out of rhythm early, thanks in part to two critical drops that we didn't think of at the time. The game was so early that you couldn't really assume these drops are going to be this important.
Well, I'm going to call three.
Large.
I mean, I know
the third one is the one in the end.
That's the one that you got to catch, and that's the one that essentially ends the football game. And so, look, I get that they were trying to build his confidence back. Something is going. He's had a history of dropping passes before, but I feel like now something's really going on. Something's up, and I just feel like in a situation like that, I don't think I'm giving the ball to him. And I'm talking specifically the last one that he dropped, the touchdown
but
pass.
But oddly, that's the one that he normally catches, right? Like, oddly, the
I know,
one
but,
when he's double
but
covered.
But he was already having a bad game is, I guess, the point that
no,
I was trying to make.
He made six catches after that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, fine. Like, but he absolutely had a part with the lack of rhythm with this game.
Well, there's no
and
doubt
it started
that,
early
right.
on. So the
early
six
on,
catches, okay, fine. And that was a way to try to appease him a little bit and try to, hey, everything's going to be okay.
But it's also important. You only have the guys that you have, right? Like, you can't suddenly say midway through the game, well, we'll just go to somebody else.
Well yes, you kind of can because I say that because where was the tight ends today? For a team that has known to be struggle against tight ends in the Browns, they didn't really make them a part of their game plan. And I just want to know, are you trying to outsmart somebody? And did you end up outsmarting yourself in the process?
I hear you. Look, one of the arguments that I would make is I thought once Hayden Hurst came back, we would see more of Mark Andrews out wide. I know he did get banged up a little bit during the course of the game. But
well, you got three more.
Right. That is true, too. But yeah, the Crabtree thing is a major part of the story, and the ball in the end zone, you know, period, point blank. There's no, you can say, hey, you know, Flacco had to zip it in there. Yeah, he had to zip it in there because that was the spot. You're an NFL wide receiver.
Oh,
we're
making that's an excuse.
Yeah, you're an
that
NFL
is an
wide receiver.
Zip it in. So when Aaron Rodgers zips it in, it's okay. When Tom Brady zips it in, it's okay.
Right.
But now all of a sudden, because you don't like this specific guy zipping it in, is a problem.
That's not the problem.
Stupid.
No.
Shut up.
No. If you are an NFL wide receiver and the ball hits you in the hands in the end zone,
catch it
every time.
The
100%. There's never a, well, yeah, but no.
There's no
stop.
But.
Stop.
Catch it.
That's on Michael Crabtree and no one else.
And stop making excuses.
Yep.
That ball touched his hands. He should have caught it.
From Brian, I know the Ravens offense was sleepwalking through the game,
yep.
but give a lot of credit to the Browns defense. I've thought highly of the Browns defense throughout the course of the week and had concerns about that. They covered our receivers well. Joe just looked uncomfortable the whole time. We look very one-dimensional. Please stop using Lamar in the gimmick plays. They did far less of it today, and the story wasn't Lamar, but like, you know, I know they converted the third and two where he just got around the edge and got to the flag by the skin of his teeth. But yes, every time you pull Joe Flacco off the field on third and two, I don't know what you're doing. Every time you put Joe Flacco out wide, I don't know what you're doing. I've been done with the Lamar Jackson experiment. It's to me not the story today, so it's not really. But I'm done with it. I've been done with it.
I've been done with it as well. The problem is this, Glenn, is that if you want to do it, take Joe out of the game. You literally are telling the defense you're only working on one side of the field.
The only
doing
argument
so.
That you can make, and I've heard people make it, even the people that make it though tell you they still think it's dumb, is that when you put Lamar Jackson into the game, you want part of the concept is you don't want your opposition to know if he's going under center or if he's going. So when you get to the huddle, if you take Joe Flacco out, then you know he's going under center. Whereas if you put Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson in the huddle, then the opposing defense doesn't know which one of them is
going
under center.
I'm specifically talking about the play when you have Joe Farr left. I'm talking about when he's outside. When you have Joe outside.
Right.
Why? Because you're only going to go to the right.
What I'm saying is I know what you're saying. I'm telling you the argument is.
That's stupid.
It's not about the play.
Stupid, Glenn.
The idea that you're trying to present is to the defense confusion.
It ain't confusing. He's running to the same side.
When they're in their huddle, they don't know which player is going under center and which player is going out wide. Rita, trust me. I'm not using it to defend it or to tell you that I think it's a good
idea. I
know
you're not. You're just telling me what people have said, and it's stupid.
That's what's going on.
It's stupid.
From Paul, same old crap we've been seeing since 2015. Bad play calling on offense. Defense can't make a stop. If you're beating up the defense today, though, seriously, what more?
I don't know how many sacks they got, but it feels like a lot. It feels like a minimum six or
seven.
The
only thing you could say is maybe they had a couple opportunities to get a turnover, and they didn't get one. And so, you know, that would be one thing. But outside of that, come on, man. This isn't about. If you allow an NFL team to only score 9 points on the road, you better win that football game.
Once again, another half of football in the second half where they did not give up a touchdown, because I believe that touchdown came in the first half of the game. So I think this is more about the offense, guys. This is an offense that was high-powered for the first 4 weeks, scoring, what, over 24 points per game or something to that effect.
And
Top 10.
And had gone 12 of 12 in the red zone and haven't gotten a touchdown in the red zone since
then. Was good on third down, which they were crappy at today, all day today. So today is more about the offense or lack thereof.
Does throw in as well. Receivers dropping passes, not making clutch passes. On side note, outside of Tucker and Cook, Rosberg special teams have made a lot of mistakes this season. Ken, same old, post-Pittsburgh hangover is real.
Yep. It is.
Thad, this is on Joe and the offense. No excuses. I guess just because he's the quarterback, you can.
Who was that? Chad?
Thad.
Thad probably doesn't like Joe, so he can't wait to use.
I don't know.
He probably can't wait to say it's all five.
I'm trying to be reasonable and try to figure out what I would be critical. There were a couple of throws that you would say that wasn't great, but for the most part, when you're being asked to throw the ball 60 times. I don't know that there's a quarterback in football that's going to throw the ball 60 times. There won't be a couple of throws you look back and say, I don't know about that one.
I think
the one interception, I guess, is the one thing you could say that you should not throw that ball in that spot. Once you see the coverage in that situation, just throw the ball out of the back of the end zone and move on. I can beat him up over that, but to me, that's not the story of what happened today.
I think that what happens is we watched an offense look lethargic. We watched them look uninspired, and I think because the quarterback is the general, we want to put that weight on him because he is the leader of the team. And so, to some degree, I do agree with that. I do think you got to find a way to get your guys back into the game. And with the Crabtree situation, they kept him involved, so we can at least admit to that part of it. But at some point, you have to point your finger at the personnel too, because the quarterback can only do his part, but everybody else has to play their part as well. And so when you have critical passes like that, and there were times where they started to move the ball and they started doing well, and then it went back to play calling. I think at the end of the first half, they started playing for the field goal, and it almost, because now I'm not in my feelings about football like it used to be, it almost pissed me off, because I was like, why are we playing for the field goal? Because this was towards the end of the half. I feel like you're having some strides, you're moving the ball, get aggressive. That would have been the perfect opportunity, in my opinion, to try to get the team rolling in the second half if you go into that locker room with 7 points as opposed to attempting to get the three, and then they didn't get it.
I don't disagree with you necessarily. They've got to establish better red zone targets now that they've struggled. And Crabtree can't.
Tight ends are there.
For what it's worth, John Brown is a great receiver, but because of his size, a speed receiver is not necessarily the best option in the red zone. And yes, with all the tight ends they have, you would like to think they've got a few better.
I don't understand.
I understand. All right, let me get to just a few more. Paul, the play calling was pathetic. We've talked about that. AJ follows up and says his criticism of Harbaugh is that he didn't get his team ready to play.
That's what Harbaugh has, essentially done after big games for his entire career. So if we're putting that on Harbs, I'm fine with that. Again, the Ravens come out and play big games, and then the next week they jet lag. I don't know what this is. I don't know what that's about. But that is who they've been, and that's why they're the same old Ravens. Sorry, Eric Weddle. They are. They haven't changed. It's who they are.
I don't necessarily disagree. You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily disagree with that. KZ rightfully points out he had the defense ready to play, and he is more involved defensively than he is offensively.
Yep.
So, you know, if there's something to be said, you could say that. I don't know what to make of if your criticism of John Harbaugh, and this is followed up by Jonathan says, what you guys pointed out is exactly what I'm saying. Harbaugh has to step up and say to Marty, hey, I don't like that call, and change it.
I agree.
And while I understand, it's not happening.
Well, it's not happening because I honestly, I'm going to be honest, I don't think that he has the knowledge enough to do that.
Whether it's that he doesn't have the comfort or the ability.
Maybe a combination of the two.
Whether it's that he does not feel as though he should be challenging his own offensive coordinator, whether it's whatever level of respect he has for Marty Morningweg, or whether it's simply him admitting his shortcomings and saying, I'm not an offensive call maker. I've never done that. I don't know how to do it. I'm not going to pretend like I do. I'm not going to pretend like I know more. Now, we saw him screaming at Marty Morningweg at the end of the game last week. And in a way, you kind of liked seeing it because there were things about the end of the game, even when the Ravens beat the Steelers. We were talking about the fact that once you're in field goal, once you're in comfortable field goal range and you're about to make it a two-score game, you're still throwing the ball wide.
Yep.
Wide.
Yep.
At that point, you have the opportunity to run the ball, force the Steelers to call their timeouts, then go up two scores and comfortably know that you're going to win the football game.
Yep.
And you wondered if that's what he was screaming at Marty Morningweg about. And
well, I hope he...
And in a way...
He got a whole lot of reasons to scream at him today.
And in a way, you were comforted by seeing it because you were like, you like the idea of John Harbaugh stepping up and saying, hey, this isn't okay, and as the head coach, I'm going to come tell you that it's not okay. You can be the play caller all you want, and I'm not trying to pretend like I am, but I will sit here and tell you this is unacceptable for you to be doing these things at the end of a football game. It doesn't make a lick of sense. So I was oddly comforted by it a week ago. Today, was that missing? I don't know. I can't watch the sideline the whole game. Maybe there were times where he did come over and say, hey, what are we doing? Why is it that we're the game was never a two-possession game.
It was never a two-possession game. We argued about this in the Bengals game, a loss. We talked about this last week against the Steelers. They win. We are talking about this right now where they doubled the amount of attempts in terms of passing as opposed to rushing in a one-possession game, and that's a loss. So you're at this point, because I can't remember the other two. I feel like that they were balanced in the first game.
Right,
I can't remember
right.
The next game. But now we're talking about three times, Glenn, where you and I have come on here and discussed the fact that they do not know how to run the football. And they have lost two out of three of those games. All of them are divisional games. When it gets cold, what are they going to do? Baltimore is a cold city. Pittsburgh is a cold city. Cincinnati is a cold city. And Cleveland is a cold city. Luckily, you don't have to go back to Cleveland. They come here at the end of the year. But still, what are you going to do when November and December get here and you need to run the football because maybe the weather's bad? Are you just going to keep throwing
right.
the football because you have a quarterback that can throw the football down the field? Or are you going to smarten up and learn how to have some balance and try to get your running back some type of rhythm
right.
so they can have a decent running game? Although, if you look at the numbers, it will say that they had a good running game. But if you watch the film, it says a different story because they just basically escaped from doing run plays early on. Whatever reason.
A lot of people going after Harbaugh in our comments today. Look, again, there are plenty of times where I go after John Harbaugh.
But personnel to me is more important today.
Today, the story to me is Michael Crabtree is
personnel.
Is 1A,
yep.
right? And then 1B would be offensive play calling. And again, if you're judging John Harbaugh as being the governor of all of that, as he's in control of the coaching staff, and so the offensive play calling also falls on him, despite the fact that he's not the one making the calls. I hear you. We'll have to get to that at the end of the season. That won't be the reason why John Harbaugh, we're going to have to ride with that. He's not going to be that guy. John Harbaugh's not going to come over and overrule Marty Morningweg on an offensive call. He's got a play caller. That guy's going to make the calls. I absolutely think that he should be giving some input as the game goes along. I'd absolutely think that he should come over to Marty and say, Marty, got a lot, it's the middle of overtime. We're getting the ball back after, what some people would call a fortunate circumstance. Even if, we all agree, even if everyone agrees with what Gene Steratore said about the call on the 4th and 5 and the defensive pass interference that wasn't because the ball was uncatchable. And I agree. That was the right call.
It was the right call.
Once the ball is out of the quarterback's hands, there is no illegal contact. There is none of that. The only call you can make once the ball has been thrown is pass
DPI,
interference.
Yeah.
And so while that it doesn't seem like a player should be allowed to ever just truck a receiver, that ball was never going to be caught by anyone. So absolutely 100%, that was the right call by the letter of the law. But you still got kind of a gift that they went for it on 4th and 5 and they had no trust in their kicker to be able to make a kick of any length. So you're still kind of given a gift at that point that the game didn't end right there.
Yep.
The notion that you would turn around and throw the ball downfield three times right afterwards. And yes, you got to execute those plays better, but the notion that that's the best thing to do in that situation after you got that gift, it felt like you were still running a 2-minute offense.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying you start playing for a tie, but the best thing to do is start working the clock to make sure that the other team's not going to...
that is the argument that I had 2 weeks ago. Three weeks ago at the Bengals game. That was the argument. The biggest thing is getting the clock down. Well, at this point, you don't even need to do that, because if you can get in field goal range, you win the game, right?
Correct.
So that doesn't even matter. But what we're saying is you do want to work the clock down, so then the other team doesn't get the opportunity if you miss the field goal and, like you said, go for the tie. I just don't understand why we're allergic to running the football. Is it because they believe that they're not good at running the football? Is it the protection of running the football is not good? Something is wrong here. And the problem, though, that is going to happen is that John Harbaugh could potentially lose his job because his loyalty to his offensive coordinator is too true and true.
Well, and ultimately, I have no problem with that.
I don't either. If you want to ride with that ship, you're going to have to ride with it.
If the season is doomed by the fact that your play calling is terrible, you were the one that decided to bring this guy
back
twice. And I get the argument has been, well, you don't want to keep changing offensive coordinators because we've beat up. One of the things we talked about with Joe Flacco is, well, it hasn't helped him to have the offensive coordinator change every other year. Fair, but that doesn't mean that you stick with the wrong one.
Thank you.
I mean, that never really seems to make much sense at all. So I will have no issue if that's ultimately what dooms John Harbaugh, and we're a long way away from that. The team's 3-2 right now. Let's not pretend like right now we're on the cusp of firing the head coach.
No, and honestly, I was telling somebody this earlier. So when the Browns obviously upgraded everything and I really didn't feel like the Ravens were that great, I had them going 9-7 before the season, and I had them tying with the Browns. I had them losing to the Browns at home. Now, of course, a 3-1 start had me changing my mind. I was like, oh, no, they should be able to beat the Browns. I didn't think it would be handily, but I thought that they would be able to get a win. Obviously, that didn't happen. So I think I'd say that because I go back to my original point. The Ravens are what I thought they were before the season started. They still have work that they need to do, and they still have to get themselves together. It's not the end of the world being 3-2.
Right.
You do have time to turn it around. I think the problem is that because we've seen this movie, we've seen this ending so many times, that we don't believe that there's a turnaround coming anytime soon unless somebody loses their job.
Well, they need to pick off some more games on the road. And like next week in Nashville becomes, I know it's not a division game, but it comes really critically important, because I think that was one of the, like, we do this all the time in with elections, or we talked about it more recently, it's swing votes, right? Like, to me, that game in Nashville now becomes, it's really a swing game. I don't think anybody could say comfortably at the beginning of the season they thought for sure the Ravens were going to Nashville and beating the Titans.
I actually had that as an L going into my season.
Some people might have felt
so
that.
So now I went from an L to, I don't know, because the Bills just literally beat the Titans today.
Right, correct. So it's a swing game to me. That's a swing game that will have a lot to do with how your season ends up playing out. You lost one that I think most people thought would be a win. Now you got to turn something that was on the fence into a victory. And so that game in Nashville next week, going a third straight road game sucks.
Yep.
But going on the road to Nashville next week, that becomes a huge game for this Ravens team to avoid falling to 3-3, to avoid, you know, having some of the feelings creep in a little bit. And also, as you watch the Bengals look really impressive again in the second half today.
Down 17-0.
Right.
Winning 27-17.
To just keep pace at this point. And not even keep pace, because you're still going to be a game back, but just to be to hang around.
You're a game
Bengals
back,
team.
But you're one and two in the division, which is not a good look.
No doubt. A few comments about Lamar Jackson from Mick. Everybody knows Lamar's going to run. What's the point? From Paul, if they're going to keep using Lamar every week, they need to finally have him throw a pass.
Well, he did. He threw a pass. It was incomplete.
Correct. There's no element of surprise with him. He takes off running with it. Look, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not defending Lamar. Stop using it. Stop it.
Yeah, we're over it, but we're telling you he threw a pass, basically.
Yeah, he did. He did attempt a pass today. KZ, the Pittsburgh hangover lives. Yep. From Govan, guess what? This is the same old Ravens. You've been talking about that. AJ, Denzel Ward is the player of the game. Lamar outran him for that first down. I like the Lamar experiment. Okay. I mean, you got that. Jacob, October woes. It's something about October. We don't perform well. This game is going to come back and bite us later. Could.
Potentially.
Absolutely could. I don't mean, sure. But I don't, we would argue with that? No chance. AJ, today's game is like the last year's Redskins or Bears losses, where it wasn't expected. Today was expected. I didn't drink the purple Kool-Aid after last week without Le'Veon Bell. Okay. From Paul, seems like one of the issues on offense is we just haven't had a well-rounded running back to take things in their own hands when the game warrants it, since Ray Rice. Forsett did well over 1 year in 2014. Collins and Allen both have their deficiencies. Collins' pass catching and ball security are suspect, and Allen just doesn't have that extra gear. I mean, that is.
Can we talk about this?
Sure.
Are people ready to talk about this? Because I said, I believe, on PressBox Fantasy and Reality Show that if the Ravens were in a position to get a guy like Darius Geis in the draft, this obviously was before the draft, I thought that they should get him. And the reason why is because
the running back from LSU that the Redskins took that ended up getting hurt in the preseason.
Obviously, he got ended up getting hurt, so it makes no point. The point I was making then was that I felt like the Ravens needed a change of at running back position, a guy that could potentially be a star. I perceived Darius Geis to potentially be a star in the National Football League. Obviously, we don't know yet because he's had injury and he's out for the year. But I said that because while Alex Collins is a nice story, he's a good story.
Well, I've never thought he was a franchise running back.
He's a nice change up. He's not a starter, guys. He's not a starter. Can he play good football? Yes. Is he a change of is he a star at running back? No.
No. No.
He's still a bunch of guys.
He's a hard
runner.
Him and
Buck Allen are guys.
He's a hard runner who keeps his legs moving, and that's great. He does not have the jump cuts. He does not have the types of moves that are necessary to go from being a good back to being a great special running back.
Yes, he's not special. Right. He's a good running back.
He's a hard runner.
This is no disrespect to Alex Collins by any means. He is a good running back. He is a hard runner. He made some good runs today. He is not special. And the point I was trying to make is I felt like the Ravens have been lacking a special guy for quite some time now. Although Forsett was good, Forsett came with a guy who knew how to use him in a specific offense, and Gary Kubiak.
Who could make a lot of things.
Absolutely.
With a lot of people work, no doubt. Heisty. Craig Heist gets in. There's not a team in this league anymore that knows anything about clock management. The Browns were just as guilty of it, driving for the game-winning field goal. Well, you're thinking specifically of Jarvis Landry not getting out of bounds.
Yes.
And no doubt. I don't get it. I don't know. It's something that you should be working on. I don't know if it's just that teams have cut back on these drills.
That was poor, though. That was poor of him. He's not a rookie.
No
question. He should know better.
You absolutely have to get out of bounds in that situation. There's no doubt about it. Clock management as a whole is an epidemic. There's no doubt about it in the National Football League.
Well, excuse me, but the Rams have a guy that specifically is there for clock management because apparently Sean McVay knows he's not good at it, and he hired somebody to specifically be the clock manager. Maybe everybody else in the league needs to take a. Hey, I'm free. If anybody needs a clock management person.
I mean, I played.
I'm that person.
I played
I can
a lot of Madden growing up. I feel like, and I
watched.
I watched a lot of football.
I can do it.
I joke about it, but I do think that, in fact, like some colleges have those types of simulators that exist that they have their coaches and players.
If you're not good at it, get somebody else that is.
Jonathan's still going back to what we're talking about with John Harbaugh on the play calling. If I'm the manager of my shop. If I don't like how someone's acting, I say something and make a change. Harbaugh has to step up and make a change when a play call makes no sense. The buck stops with him. Thanks so much for speaking the truth. I'm not arguing with your theory. What I'm saying is he's not going to do that.
Correct.
We're too far into this with John Harbaugh, 11 years, to think that's coming. So at this point, If that's what dooms him, his unwillingness to do that and having the wrong guys, that's what dooms him, and I'll have no problem with that. But if we think next week that's going to change and he's going to start overruling, I just don't see where that's coming from. That's not him. That's not something he's going to do. Paul, I guess things could be worse. We could be the Falcons or the Giants. The Falcons lost three key players on D. They still have been a letdown. Giants beefed up the O-line in the offseason, but Eli is still Eli. Larry, this is funny. Glenn, I finally have nothing. I am too exhausted to even comment. Let's just move on.
You know, this was the type of let's just move on game. I literally screamed in here. And guys, I just want to be clear. I am a Ravens fan. I want them to do well.
Right.
But I felt like this game was not theirs to win very early on. And I was when it went to overtime, I was like, F the Browns. I cannot believe they will not take me out of my misery and win this game in regulation.
Right.
And so, listen, I wanted this game to be over probably in the third quarter. The Ravens didn't deserve it. I'm not even mad because they didn't go out there and act like they wanted to play. I'm tired of being upset, so I just don't get upset anymore. It feels good to not be upset. Come join me, because sometimes you just got to let games like these, which was horrible to watch, horrible to witness, you just got to move on to next week. So I'm with you. Let's just move on.
That's where we're at. Well, before we move on, I need 30 seconds to tell everybody at the U.S. Army, and then we will talk about what's coming up next for the Baltimore Ravens as they head to Nashville next week. So we will do that as we roll along the Project Game Day post-game show, which is brought to you by Glory Days Grill and the U.S. Army.
Respect. It's more than a word. In the U.S. Army Reserve, it is a core value, a value that brings together a variety of people from across the nation to answer the call to serve. Serving part-time in the U.S. Army Reserve means earning the respect of your community and your nation, all while pursuing your career and educational goals and staying close to home. And now, in addition to earning respect, you may qualify to earn up to $20,000 in bonuses when you join. To see if you qualify, visit goarmy.com/reserve or call 1-800-USA-ARMY. Paid for by the U.S. Army.
Ravens superfan gets in with a bit of a hot take, and I'll discuss this a little bit. Says our two first round picks combined for 17 yards of offense. We took two scrubs.
Okay, you're doing the most
now.
The most is being done
now.
The one guy just got in the game today.
I understand. Now let me have a whole conversation about this, though.
Why?
Because I understand why.
Why are you even doing this?
Because
right now,
Glenn? I want to have a whole conversation. Because okay. I'm gonna get there. You just got to stay with me. All right. Of course, that's the immediate response. Of course, the immediate response is Lamar Jackson played like five snaps. Right. Like, you're not really judging how many yards Lamar Jackson got today. If you're judging him as the quarterback of the future, and you can judge him when he becomes the quarterback, and if he ends up being a really good quarterback, then it was a good pick, and if he doesn't end up being a really good quarterback, then it wasn't a good pick. Hayden Hurst, as you point out, yes, made his NFL debut today. Now, let me tell you two things on the flip side. As we talked about with Hayden Hurst, and I know you're a Hayden Hurst fan, he is a 25-year-old rookie. You don't have a long time to allow him to develop.
Oh my God. The guy that plays for the Falcons is going to be 25 years old, and he's had a great season so far. So that means nothing. Stop it.
Who are you talking about?
Calvin Ridley is just as old as Hayden Hurst.
He's a year younger.
I believe he'll be 25 this year. He's 24 years old already. Stop.
I understand.
Next point.
I understand.
I just gave you a reason. I just gave you a reason why that point can be disqualified.
You didn't disqualify it.
He owed two. He owed two in rookie years. That's exactly my point.
But he's developed very quickly.
Because he's in a team that actually cares a lot about offense.
I understand that. I understand what you're saying. By the way, he turns 24 later on this year, so he is a year younger.
Okay, fine. He's still old for a rookie.
Fine, but he's developed very quickly. And this is my point about Hayden Hurst. There's no problem with saying that. But he has to develop quickly. He doesn't have 5 years to develop. It can't be a project. And it's a tough position for players to come in and succeed immediately in the National Football League. We know that. Rookie tight ends typically don't play very well. Now, I don't really care long term. If Hayden Hurst looks like a stud in 4 years, we're going to sit back and say that was a better pick. But the point that I always bring up, and this is, I'll compare it to the Pat Mahomes situation, right? Pat Mahomes looks like he's God. He looks like he is the Messiah. That doesn't mean that I don't know that if the Chiefs hadn't not traded away their pick a year ago and instead, say, taken Tre'Davious White, who was the player that went with the original pick that they had and who has looked like an absolute monster in the National Football League, I don't know that they might not have had a chance to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years. I don't know that Pat Mahomes is ever going to win a Super Bowl. You certainly like his chances because he's that good, but I don't know that he ever is going to win a Super Bowl. And in a similar comparison, if we go through this entire season without Hayden Hurst or Lamar Jackson being impact players for the Ravens, that doesn't mean that they're never going to be impact players for the Ravens. But the Ravens might have needed players to step in immediately and make an impact this season. In fact, I think most of us believe that they would have. So to trash the picks, too quick. But there's absolutely fair room to have a take of the Ravens needed to find players in the draft this year that could come in and make an impact because they didn't have enough good ones. They didn't have enough difference makers on their roster at this point in April. Those players didn't exist. We know that. We talked about it ad nauseum, the lack of difference-making players that they had. And with their first two picks in the draft, which ended up both being two first-round picks, you know, originally it was going to be a first and a second-round pick. If they had drafted two players that came in and made immediate impacts this season, I don't know if that might not have been the difference in winning a game in Cincinnati a couple weeks ago or winning a game today against Cleveland. It might very well have been. But that's a measurement that you have to make, is a player's ability to make an impact immediately when taken versus a player that might end up needing more time to develop. My problem with Lamar Jackson's decision at all times was, if you're a team that's drafting a quarterback in the National Football League, it's because you need to have a quarterback come play. It's not because you're thinking about 3 years down the road. How any NFL team could be thinking about 3 years down the road is insane. It's insane. We are so far past that at this point to be thinking 3 years down the road. And frankly, it's why a lot of us believe they're forcing him onto the field right now, is because they have to justify the fact that they used the first round pick on him this year. So I do think it's fair to judge the two picks that were made in the first round. Not as busts, not as, what was the guy's, what was this wording? Scrubs. No. Come on, that's silly. But were the Ravens better off using their first two picks on players that were going to make an impact in the first 5 weeks of the season?
Are you done?
Sure, go ahead.
Are you done?
Go ahead.
Are we done here?
Go ahead.
You literally went into a whole thesis about a guy who just started his first game today because he was hurt.
Right, yes. But if he doesn't make an impact throughout the course of the season is the point that I'm making.
No. We're talking about a man who got his first start today from an injury. You went through a whole thesis about it. Who got a start today because 4 weeks prior he couldn't play.
I understand that.
So that everything that you said prior to that, Lamar is valid. I'll give you the Lamar because we've talked about this before. We've talked about Lamar, how they've invested in him because of the 50-year deal.
Do you think it's important that Hayden Hurst becomes a playmaker
this
season?
I feel like that the Hayden Hurst part of that is so moot because today was the first time that he was able to step on the field in regular season.
Right,
we cannot have that conversation today.
But you're suggesting that what I'm saying is that he can't be.
I'm suggesting that that point on this day makes zero sense. That's what I'm saying.
Well, no, I think my point is it's critical that he becomes that guy. The Ravens aren't going to get where they need to be.
What I'm saying is that we don't have anything. We have nothing to worry about, or we have nothing. We have nothing to go for from because we have nothing. You understand what I'm saying? We have nothing.
That's why I said it's silly to judge him as a scrub. That's silly. Yes.
Yeah, but the point.
But there's nothing wrong with saying.
We don't know if he's going to be an impact player because he hasn't played.
But that's not what I said.
That's what you said.
No, I said he needs to be. And that part is important.
But
he absolutely
we're basically not giving a man an opportunity to thrive.
You're responding to what this person said,
not
what I said.
I heard what you said.
Right.
I got you. Because you said that the Ravens needed to get impact players right away. The point I'm making is that we don't know if he's an impact player because he hasn't played.
Understood. But he needs to
become one. So why do we need to have that conversation?
Because it's important to note that that's how you're going to judge these two picks.
First of all, us talking about that guy, what he said was crazy because he's crazy.
But I moved on to it to make a point.
Your point about Lamar is absolutely valid.
But I'm not even judging Lamar Jackson. I'm not even saying that I think Lamar Jackson isn't a player.
No,
I'm saying,
I get you're saying that first round draft picks have to have immediate impact, and I'm saying that the one guy that they got first has literally just made the step on the field. So why can't we delay that conversation for another 4 weeks? That's what I'm saying.
In 4 weeks I'll be in a better position to judge him postpartum.
And so that's why I don't know why we're even going there now.
There's nothing wrong with saying if the Ravens are going to achieve what they need to achieve this season, Hayden Hurst is better going to have to become a player this season.
Yes.
That's the point. There's nothing wrong with saying that.
That point, you could have said that and then made everything else about Lamar.
But I backed it up with all of the reasons why that was reasonable.
It was unnecessary. That's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is that a guy who played very well in the preseason got hurt at the end of training camp and made his first debut today. Why are we having a conversation about him when he hasn't even had an opportunity to show us if he is that guy? We don't know.
And I think this is the part that you want to dismiss more. You more want to dismiss. You want to throw.
I just want him to have the opportunity. I feel like we're not giving him one already.
But the problem is because, and I know you don't like bringing up the age conversation, but it's relevant.
We can bring it up.
When you draft someone who's 25 years old, you now, if you lose any time on the front, you're definitely losing time on the back. It's putting you into more of a crunch. When you draft a 25-year-old tight end, you have to believe that guy is ready to play sooner than any other tight end that you might have taken. You can't use that pick on a 25-year-old tight end unless you believed he was going to get on the field immediately and make an impact.
I believe that. Well, I think that they had made that known that that was going to happen. Obviously, a foot injury set that back. back. So you had to play what you had to play. Luckily, you got a tight end in the third round that could take the place of that. Hopefully, they'll be able to utilize what they have, because today I don't know what they were doing and not allowing their tight ends to be fully involved in this game plan. Obviously, they want to bring him in slowly, because right. I guess they're still testing it out. I just think that we're giving him an unfair benefit, and his age does have a lot to do with it, and it's kind of unfair.
But that not maybe to him, not to the Ravens. The Ravens drafted
him. But they invested in him.
But they put a huge investment in a 25-year-old.
Sure, but him being injured is no different than Darius Geis, who I just talked about earlier, not seeing the field at all, who's much younger.
And that's the problem. So it's not nearly the issue when he comes back, because you still assume that you've got a few more years in that player than you do in this player. And that's not to say that injuries don't happen. Of course injuries happen.
Sure.
But that's why typically teams don't draft 25-year-old players in the first round at most positions. More or less at positions, pass catching, where they had a massive deficiency and needed an immediate impact player. None of this is to say, again, Hayden Hurst might next week have 10 catches for 140 yards, and we're sitting back here saying, "Welp, that looks like the smartest pick of all time." My point is that he has to be.
I don't disagree. I just feel like we're putting this on him right now. He just got here.
I think you're responding to him, this guy, again, who I don't know the name.
I'm responding to him, but I'm responding to you in terms of you feeling the need to argue that point.
But I'm not defending him. I'm making a different point. I'm making a completely separate point about Hayden Hurst, which is total and combining it with Lamar Jackson. This franchise was not in a position to have two projects be their first two picks.
I don't think that the first one was a project at all. I don't think he's a project at all. The second one, we can argue. But the first one, I don't think that's...
The second one, they had... of course, the second one was a project. The first one... He can't be, is the point, right? That first one can't be a project. He's got to be a playmaker quickly. And whether I get it, injuries be injuries. You're still 5 weeks into the season. You're now, I don't like thinking about it. You're approaching the midway point of the NFL season. You don't have a ton of time to figure these things out about your football team, right?
Yeah.
You're 5 weeks in. We're starting to figure out who your football team is. This guy's got to be there quickly. He's got to come along very quickly, or else you shouldn't have been taking a 25-year-old tight end in the first round of the NFL draft.
I think he's fine. I just think that the guy that runs the plays
is
a little confused. Didn't really do a good job in implementing him or the other guys that play his position today.
I don't necessarily disagree with that either. I don't necessarily disagree. We're not even be able to yell. You're bailing next week. You're bailing on me next week, aren't you? So I can't even have it out with you next week.
No, I'll be here, because that game is a 4:25 game.
Yes.
So I should be back by then.
Oh, okay. So you're all right.
I should be back by
all
then.
All right, Reed will be back next week. Ravens Titans next Sunday. As we talked about, this becomes a much more critical game. You win in Cleveland, you could survive if you ended up losing in Nashville and sort of say, hey, we're 4-2, despite the fact that we played four games on the road in our first six, we're in pretty good shape. This one becomes pretty important now. Would next you, Sunday.
You feel 3-3 or 4-2 along the horizon? Titans aren't that good either, by the way.
I got a lot of time to think about it, and I'm going to need all the time
to think
about
it. Yeah, me too.
I'm going to need all the time
I'm not going to lie to you. I think that this is it could potentially be, even though the Browns are better than they've been in years past in personnel, they're still the Browns, so this could potentially be a little humiliating for the Ravens because they thought they were better. So I think that could be a push.
It gets their focus back.
That gets them back on some type of track to game plan better. The Titans didn't play well today either, but I don't feel like that they have enough personnel to be much
but let's
better.
They did go beat the Eagles pretty
they needed help with that too.
Hey, catch all of the action at your neighborhood Glory Days Grill, where we have tons of TVs to catch every moment of every game. $5.99 burgers on Mondays, $5.99 nachos on Thursdays, drink specials throughout the season to help you cheer on your favorite teams or lament the results of your favorite teams. Come in today, try something new from the seasonal menu. Glory Days Grill, great food, good sports. At the NFL Chick on Twitter, and next Sunday, the Fantasy and Reality Football Show. I guess you'll be out for that next Sunday, but typically the Fantasy and Reality Football Show Sunday mornings with KZ and Kyle Ottenheimer. Kyle and I are back with you tomorrow morning for Glenn Clark Radio, 10 to noon, same spots, facebook.com/PressBoxSports or PressBoxOnline.com/radio. This has been the Project Game Day post-game show after a Ravens loss. We will talk to you next Sunday a little bit later on after Ravens Titans. See you then.